Hi folks, before we start today's podcast, I just want to let you know that we are starting some exclusive patron-only podcasts and they will be available on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It's not something that we're doing lightly, we just can't provide enough content and we've found that it's not sustainable. Unfortunately, we need to move this way. We've no sponsors, we've no alternative. So if you want to avail of it, you want to help us, you can come over there and chip in. You'll have the opportunity to shape the conversation. And for the price of a cup of coffee every month, you'll get regular updates and guest updates and the ability to submit questions, suggestions, recommendations. And there will be exclusive podcasts. I hope you join us. We really do need the support. Thank you. Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we're talking hospitality and not in the sense that you think. As always, I'm joined by my co-host and the most inhospitable man I've ever met. Martin, you look, go on, say something smart.
No, talking about hospitality, just want to say be hospitable towards this pod. Go get the price of a cup of coffee. www.patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Did I get that right, Tony?
No, I'll let it go, mate.
Okay, so please come on board, be a patron.
Yeah, no, it really helps, guys. It's we're doing it. This is number 245 just in the Echo Chamber now. And that actually, if I take away the ones that we did that we didn't number, we're well over 250, man.
Yeah, it feels like 250 years, which
it
honest,
really Tony. Does. We tell this all the time, but people always say, how long have you known each other? And you must be friends for a long time.
What no, no, we're not friends. We're colleagues.
We're not friends at all. Much more importantly, we're delighted to be joined in the Tortoise Shack by Hospitality and Tourism Coordinator with Unite Union, Julia Marcheniak.
Yes, that's correct. Julia Marcheniak, yes.
Julia, thank you so much for coming in to us. No, honestly, we tried to organise this a few weeks ago and we were, the general election kind of swept
got in
us.
The way. Yeah.
Yeah, the general election got in the way. So I appreciate you coming over and taking the time. Do you want to first of all tell us, give us a little bit of a background about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, like, first of all, thank you for inviting me.
No problem.
Okay, so I'm a hospitality and tourism coordinator for Unite Now, but I spent the last 11 years in Dublin working in the hospitality sector. And my experience wasn't definitely one of the most enjoyable. Mm. So there is a lot of mistreatment in the sector from my experience and not only my experience, unfortunately. So, like, I think then migrants workers are in the biggest disadvantage because, first of all, they not aware of their rights. Mm. And that is the biggest problem in the sector. So people basically are denied of like basic workers' rights, like a right to rest. Like myself, at first when I arrived in here, I remember seeing my first roster. Mm. When I was roster on split shifts, like it was like from 6 till 12 o'clock. Then I supposed to be back from 5 till 11. Mm. And then 6 in the morning again. Till 3.
Yeah.
And I actually questioned it. I was like, oh, is that all right? Like, I think it's some mistake. That can't be right.
Yeah.
And then I get a response, oh, no, that's how it is in here.
Mm.
So I kind of dropped it. My English was poor, you know. I didn't really know where to go.
Mm.
Then, you know, like you asking colleague or manager and there is that response. Everybody is doing it, you know. So I just kind of go ahead with the shifts and like, you know, like I didn't really feel like there is any place I can go further.
Mm.
So like, I changed a lot of workplace during that time because mm. I wasn't really too happy with any of my employments. Then I kind of stayed longer in one of the places. It was few, which I stayed for a few years. And
yeah.
Then like in between, I was kind of searching for that.
Other jobs,
like for something good and never find one in the hospitality, really, like, you know, like never find the perfect employment, let's put it this way.
Mm.
So I was working in one of the places in the city center for 4 years.
Okay.
And I started to get some health problems. So the first moment I call sick to work, I was fired.
Wow.
Exactly on the spot. So I decide I'm not going to let that go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wasn't in the union and I didn't really know how to proceed, what to do. I hired a solicitor. It was quite pricey and wasn't really effective. And I proceeded the case over unfair dismissal. It was actually hard to prove because they didn't present me with P45.
Yeah.
And over bullying and harassment. It was absolutely horrendous in the place. So it affect, I think, like, it actually affect my physical and mental health.
Yeah.
Because I experienced such a level of abuse then it's unimaginable now. Mm. Then I actually stay in the place. And actually one of the reasons I stay in the place was then the owner didn't steal the tips.
Yeah.
So the money was great. So that really was why I put up with being called names every day. And it's actually, even now, it's years.
Later.
It's years later. And my big problem is to call myself stupid. So, yeah. You know, like, because it's kind of imprint in your head.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm coming to talk to union people and it's like, oh my God, I'm so stupid. I actually have to be banned by Brendan Ogle to say this.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, it's like, oh, Julia, you're here 10 minutes, you said it and you're stupid 20 times.
Mm.
And, you know, like, I wouldn't even notice that.
Mm.
But moving forward, I'm sorry, because, like, you know, that really get an impact on me because as well, I accept that for so long.
Yes, it does. It does. It becomes your reality.
Yeah.
But you have, there is, apart from your own personal experience in the sector, there is actually a report that deals with problems that are in the sector. Isn't that right?
Yes. So it's a very good research done by Deidre Karen.
Mm.
And she got 30 years of experience doing research and she stayed herself. Then that was the first research which actually kept her awake at night.
Oh God.
So the finding were so shocking. Then just to give you some numbers, like the number of people who took the part of the survey, it's 257, sorry. Mm-hmm. It's 257 and 76% experience verbal abuse, sometimes or often. 64% psychological abuse, sometimes or often. 15% experience physical abuse, sometimes or often. So after asking how many people, you know, did they report? So most of the people don't report to anybody. And out of the people who report that kind of abuses, maybe 15% get any, something was done about the situation.
So of 15% of people, 15% of that 15%.
I'm not sure how many. So it was like 15% out of the people who complain.
Yeah.
But I know then most of, actually, according to the research, most of the people didn't even try to bring the issue anywhere. And there is another high number. And I think that is really characteristic to hospitality sector.
Yeah.
Which is sexual harassment.
Okay.
So 55% say then witness or experience a sexual harassment at work. And to be perfectly honest about that issue with you, I don't believe that people actually know what is a definition of sexual harassment. And that number will be much higher if they knew. And as well, like nobody wants to talk about it. I was working with Deidre Falvey from the Irish Times on the article about the sexual harassment in the hospitality sector. And I was calling like several people, each I know, and asking them to make some statements, you know.
Share their experiences.
Exactly. And, you know, their names wouldn't be printed. We wouldn't use the names of the places they were work. Still, nobody wants to talk about it. Mm-hmm. The people fear that even if you say like, oh, that was whatever, Dublin One, the restaurant. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think then as well for a lot of people, it's so hard. They think then if they admit that they were abused, they kind of become a victim.
Mm.
And what I'm trying to tell them, it's like you become a fighter. The moment you speak out loud your truth, you're not longer a victim, you know? Mm. But it's still like, you know, it's really hard because people, mostly migrant workers.
And I was just going to ask that mm-hmm. survey, was that mainly migrant workers?
Like it was done around the hospitality sector. So
there will have been a mix.
Yeah, it will be just a mix of workers. But I think then, you know, like even if you see yourself, if you go to the restaurant,
yeah,
most of the people who are serving you are migrants, the chefs, the same. It's all mixed. I think the minority is native speakers and Irish people at the moment. Like definitely.
The sector itself would be a big employer for migrants. It'd be much higher than say finance or say other industries. It would certainly be definitely higher.
Oh, it is. And there are specific sectors where, migrants are, there's really, and it's generally what they call Schedule D workers, Tony. It's people who are in the services industry. As we spoke before, it's also workers who are in delivery industries. It's predominantly migrant workers. And there is, as you said, when you make a complaint, you run the risk of being fired straight away. And that's the big problem.
I think then one of the worst law it is, then there is a 12-month period, mm-hmm. then you can be fired anytime. Mm. And especially in the hospitality, when there is like so much moving around the jobs. Mm. And as well, like, let's face it, in the hospitality sector, after few days, if it comes to the waitress, you know, if the person is capable of doing the job, you know, like maybe a longer period of time for a chef, but I think then all of the workers after 6 months max, you know, like, you know, then the person is good for job or not.
Oh, yes.
You know?
There was it's not that long ago that 6 month probationary periods, where once it was done, you were permanent, you know?
That's right. And it changed. It did change that there was 6 months probationary. They changed that out to 12 months. And now you have the internships, which are basically a year or two of unpaid work for people as well, Tony. I mean, it's all rights issues the whole way across the line. What was your reception when you went to try and tackle the abuses that were happening with you?
Like, my first experience, as I said, was like in a court with a solicitor. I wasn't really happy with the way she approached things, but you know, like, I was still happy to put up the fight. And in the sense, I start to know the workload very good. And I think by the time of the case, I knew my case better than she did, you know? Yeah. So that was good. And actually, after that, like quite shortly after that, I got a job in the Ivy restaurant.
Yes. Now, tell us what happened there with the Ivy, because this has been in the newspapers quite a bit. And I know you're limited on what you can say because there is a court case pending as well.
Yes, there is a court case coming shortly. We don't have a date yet, but I think it might be in the next 4 weeks. It looks like that. And I think it's a very important case for all the hospitality sector, because I'm hoping we gonna be able to highlight the issue around the tips.
And do you want to explain to listeners who have their heads buried in the sand what is actually happening with the tips in the Ivy restaurant? This fantastic new fancy restaurant right in the heart of Dublin city centre, in a new building that was supposed to be just a couple of hundred metres from the Dáil. Like, it's literally just there. It's this lovely building, and they were serving pints of Guinness in a goblet.
You see, like, policy of the company, if it comes to tips, changed several times.
Okay.
So first of all, we were hired, being promised then 80% of all the tips gonna go to actual server who mind the section, and 20% gonna go to the back of the house. So foot runners, kitchen, bartenders, no, there was no problem with that. But as soon as we start work, everything changed. So, first of all, we were informed then service charge not gonna go to us at all. It wasn't really explained why. So every table of five or more, it's basically whatever the service charge, it's on the bill. It's not gonna
go to staff.
Then they make a change. Then a credit card tips supposed to be shared 60%. They weren't really clear about it. We were assuming then that's gonna go to back of the house. I think like bartenders, again like a food runner's kitchen, and 40% of all the credit cards tips created will go to staff. But on our first paycheck, we didn't find any tips. And we were promised then, oh, hey, next paycheck, you're gonna get a tips for, you know, all the 6 weeks, because like the first month, it was like 2 weeks of training. Then another 2 weeks. So, and the tips were amazing because the prices are pretty high. It's, as you said, like, you know, that beautiful building, you know, all the posh decor and, you know, like the famous name. So the bills were pretty high. So people kind of...
percentage.
Exactly. So, you know, the tips were amazing. So we were like expecting like a huge chunk of money. And then for 6 weeks, it's add up a little bit below 500 euro for me. And I think that was for 200 hours of work in 4 weeks as well. Like, you know, it's like, I think 194 hours exactly. So, you know, like we already knew then that's not 40%. It didn't make sense. It was just like, what is this? So people start to be like a bit resistant to that. And, but we really didn't know what to do. We made a petition to the management. Each basically put us nowhere. It was like no explanation, whatever and however the tips are going to be shared. And I think it was November when we get our first paycheck without the bonus at all.
Okay.
So again, the first paycheck wasn't...
Was without it.
Yeah. So then for like, I think like everybody was going crazy. All the workers get really mad. There was absolutely no explanation from the management. And then the letter about the greed of the staff show up on the door of the counting. So nobody really talked to us. It was just a letter basically stating then a lot of workers skip the credit, the tip on the credit card option, because that's one of the
options.
That is the policy. At least that was the policy. Then we were required to offer the, customer to tip on card.
So, so you had to say, you had to literally say to the customer, do you want to leave a tip?
Yeah, it's like we have to pass them the machine with the option. So, you know, after the few first paychecks, when people discover then that it's in no sense a 40%, in no mean that that's just not add up. People, some of the employees could skip the option, or if the guests say like, would you prefer the cash or you prefer the card? They will just say the truth. I prefer
the cash.
When they were asked, obviously, you know, because some people are actually aware then the whole sector, it's not really, you know, it's not an uncommon question to ask, you know, being a waitress is it going, to you? Would that go to you? Or is it better cash? So basically we were punished because apparently we didn't create enough money, and the money is supposed to be borrowed from London because we didn't create enough money to pay our wages. So basically what was happening as well, Ivy Restaurant pay everybody minimum wage, so that's what they do. They pay 980, but the like now it's gonna be 10 euro 10.
Still way below the living wage, by the way.
Still way below, but what the contract says are, there are different numbers. So people will get 10, 50, 12 euro, whatever. And then that difference is made up out of the tips.
Yeah.
So once we kind of like, because it took us a while as well, because, you know, there is in Ireland, we don't really use a trunk system, which is quite popular in UK. Then they actually get that kind of bonus system, which is divided to, between all the workers, which I never, actually, I personally never saw that in any other restaurant I have ever worked in, or I never met anybody who knew what the trunk is. So basically, trunk made up the difference between the minimum wage and our contractual wage.
Yes.
So obviously, people get mad. Some of the workers contact the Irish Times and other newspapers, and a lot of media attention starts to be around the whole situation. So there's, you know, the situation for the workers itself improve a little bit, because obviously the people who read the newspaper
were looking at the situation. Yeah,
exactly. So they were asking, and they were giving cash, you know.
Yes.
So for whatever a week, we were able to make some money. And but that all kind of lower down after a week, you know, like people, the newspaper one day,
people,
it's a news,
yeah,
then there is on the bottom of the bin. So that's how it works. So we were in the same situation again. So no credit card tips, then most people pay on card. You can't not give them an option either, because, you know, you are being watched. And as well, we, all the workers were, we actually weren't allowed to take the payments on the card anymore. So only management at this stage
were doing the card.
Yeah. Only management were doing a card. It was ridiculous because people complained they wait so long to pay.
Just to pay. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It was, it was absolutely crazy. It was madness. You know, people were asking like, why can't you take a payment? And as well, you feel a little bit stupid because obviously most of the workers are migrants. You get your accent and you just feel like, okay, those people think we can't use the machine,
yes,
you know, like we can't handle, you know, to put the numbers. It was like the whole situation was quite silly. But, so our newspaper didn't really fix everything.
They rarely do. They rarely do fix everything. But I do remember I worked in the service industry going back over 20 years ago. And tips, the big change is tips were nearly always in cash.
Yeah.
They were nearly always in cash, and there was no involvement with the management whatsoever.
And that's the way it should be.
We split the tips amongst ourselves as we saw fit to split the tips. And it was very democratic, and it was split back of house, front of house. It was split that way.
Mm.
And the management had no input or say in it. What you describe now is what we used to call OTE, on target earnings.
Yes.
60 quid a week plus your chances. You remember this, Tony.
Yeah.
And it was, it's less than employment. If your contract said 12 quid an hour, that's what you should be getting paid, and your tips are over and above that. The very notion that they could put 12 quid an hour in your contract and then tell you, no, it's minimum wage, but you've to make up the rest on tips, which we decide at our discretion whether we're going to give to you or not. Yeah, I'd say it's going to be a really interesting court case.
I'd say
it's going to be a really interesting court case.
And I think what's important to listeners to understand is that this isn't, if you think that this is like, you know, oh, this is just one case, it's not.
It's right, you know, across the board.
It's right across the board. We've seen Pizza Express in the UK, how they did it with all the Milano shops and the restaurants in Ireland.
Yeah.
We've seen of these things. And again, another thing, if you're not in the hospitality sector, as I always say to people, if the wolf is coming to someone's door and he gets away with it, he'll come to your door next. I can tell you, as someone who's in financial services, that even at the time when they tore up all of the, when First Active disappeared and all of these banks disappeared, they tore up contracts overnight, and they turned around and they said, you're now gone from this to this, you now have to work Saturdays, you have to, and people who came in on other contracts, we refer to them as yellow pack contracts. We see it with teachers and the two-tier system of what teachers are paid. This is a really, really, this is one of the worst cases of it, though, because, you know, teachers are coming out into something that's paying above a living wage, and they should be, absolutely. But this is, you know, these are the people who we actually look across and then take all of that abuse that you talk about at the beginning. Well, it's so important you said that, you know, because some of the abuse that these staff members get, let's face it, a lot of it is from the public. You get
It is some from the public, but I actually wouldn't say that actually most comes from the, and even according to the research,
yeah.
I've most of the abuse coming from the people in power position.
Yeah.
So it's going to be an owner or manager.
And especially when, as you said, in a industry that has predominantly migrant workers who probably don't know their rights as well as they probably could if they were Irish, or and they obviously don't have as much representation, which is why it's a credit to you that you're actually now a coordinator with Unite. You know, this is
yeah.
But so, there's also a lot of places, Tony, that don't allow unions inside the door, and we've seen an example of that recently with Paddy Power, who will not let the union inside the door, and have threatened to call the Gardaí on a friend of ours, David, if he crosses the door into a Paddy Power's office. You know, that's what happens in this country. Union rights in this country are not easy got.
Mm.
And the companies have you can't force them to recognize union representation.
They weren't easily gained, but yeah. They've been fairly easily eroded.
Oh, they've been eroded. Look, they've been eroded. As soon as they were given them, they were taking them away, Tony.
Can I ask you, in taking the Ivy case out of it, in the broader sense of it, is there is union membership growing?
Like, it's growing very slowly, because like we just basically established the hospitality branch in Unite.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as you were talking about the union rights, and, you know, I fully agree with you, but if it comes to hospitality, we really starting so way back. We starting from the point when people don't know what their rights are and what the union is. So, you know, like as well, sometimes you get a language barrier. So, you know, like, okay, people understand like a casual conversation.
Mm.
But when you try to start a conversation about union, like we done a lot of leafleting around the city center and, you know, like, oh, you said like, oh, you are from the workers union, Unite, and, you know, you want to talk about the conditions in the hospitality. You want to, you know what the problems are, what we should address. You want to invite them to the office or whatever it might be the case. And the people will say like, oh, just like, let me call my manager.
Yes.
And you're just like, no, I want to talk to you because it's about you. It's about the workers. And then there is, but you know, like you don't really have that much time to have the conversation to explain all of it.
And how did that experience translate when you were in the Ivy? Were you able to use any of your experience you learned? Were you able to teach other people in there how to deal with stuff?
Like I was definitely able to work with the union about that. So, you know, I could spot the things which weren't done correctly and I could give that information to the union and ask them to help me to address the issues.
And it kept changing. I mean,
The policy about tips kept changing. And at the moment, actually, there is an optional service charge on every table, 12.5%.
Yes.
So people assume then that goes to the workers and that's just make up the workers' wages. It is absolutely crazy. And, you know, like in the sense like people, it's optional, so people can remove it. But they assume then that's a tip.
Yes.
On the top of the wages. So they don't ask to remove it, you know. But yeah, like so definitely there was more issues. There was a camera in a changing room, which was actually called co-educational.
Oh, God.
In the Ivy. Yeah. So, you know, like because the first contact the union made, it was like, you know, regarding the breaks, camera in the changing room, staff food and tips. And Ivy kind of fixed the situation with camera, tried to fix the situation with the breaks and didn't want to hear about the tips at all,
yeah.
You know. But I have to mention like before as well, before we get in touch with the union, and that's actually show you how little people know about the union. And even with me who get a previous court case, it wouldn't occur to me then we should contact the union. We actually contact John Collins TD from Independent for Change.
Joan is great. Yes.
Yeah. So she was amazing and she was the person, she's the person who introduced us to Brendan Ogle. And that's when we really get our first conversation about unions.
About organizing.
about organizing. And yeah, so we start to join, and myself and my colleague, we started quite actively organizing. And, you know, like, oh, okay, there was already a publication in newspaper, and we get a union letter confronting them about the issue as well. Mm. So obviously the management was keeping eye on everybody and see all the movements. And, you know, in the place like this, you can kind of spot on quite easily who is talking to who and what is going on. So eventually we were accused of some situation with the customer.
Yeah.
And we were escorted out of the building.
Wow.
So they actually make a huge deal about it. They make sure then other workers gonna get scared.
Yeah, put the frighteners on.
Exactly. So it was, you know, from that moment, it was very hard to encourage other workers to join the union, because obviously we have union members escorting out of the building, escorted out of the building. You know, I was told to empty my locker. I actually changed in front of the manager.
Jeez.
So, because we're not supposed to talk to any other
staff
members as well. And, you know, like the whole thing was really, really intense. So my colleague got fired first.
Mm.
So, and union managed to bring me back, but I survived about 2 weeks and then I got suspended again. So I get suspended again, and eventually I get fired, you know, and I really don't want to focus all about the Ivy, but it's kind of come together to all the legislation about protecting tips, because, like, you know, kind of, it's going on everywhere. Mm. It's going on almost everywhere.
I spoke about this before, and it came up recently as well. There seems to be, and I can't put my finger in, but there seems to be a policy within workplaces that if a worker starts to organize, starts to get other workers organized, the management automatically fire them. They automatically fire them. And it's not just in your sector. It's right across the board. That's even in your financial sector, Stoney. Anybody who gets kicked up gets fired. Now, the reason behind that is they don't want you. And I feel those instructions come from a central body who tell people, fire them straight away. Get rid of them.
I don't know if it's a central body, but I guarantee you it's a playbook.
It certainly is a playbook, Tony. It certainly is. I've seen it before.
It plays out like that. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, though, because I know when we spoke first that initially, and I know this is a bit of a divergence, but I want to go there anyway. You were initially asked to go on to RTE to discuss this.
Yes.
And at the time, someone rang back and said, can we have someone else who has a doesn't have your strong accent?
Yes.
Now, I don't want to cast aspersions, but I have to say, first and foremost, the person who was asked wasn't the person who had the lived experience. And we do have a saying in this little room that we say nothing about us without us.
Yeah.
And that if you want to
know what somebody else is thinking, pull up a chair.
Yes. If you just pull up a chair, do not, and I mean this in terms of journalists, broadcasters and stuff, do not go and get a spokesperson for someone when you can actually have the person who has the lived experience.
The whole situation was really, really strange, because, you know, I organized a protest in front of the Ivy restaurant that day. Mm-hmm. And I released, like, Unite released a statement on my behalf, commenting on the legislation of protecting tips by Work Minister Regina Doherty.
Yeah.
And that's actually was the reason why the RTE contact Unite and request a spokesperson.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously I was the person who supposed to speak about, you know, the Ivy campaign, the protest, the statement, and, you know, like the whole situation. And then I get a phone call to speak to a producer, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And like what really irritated me, then I get that conversation and nothing was really said to me. Like, mm-hmm. oh, okay, like you can't use the certain words, you know, like, because it can get you in trouble, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that was it. So 2 minutes later, the PR person got a phone call
mm-hmm.
requesting another spokesperson because I have too strong accent.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I think then maybe in the gut feeling, it's just like, you know, why wouldn't you say that to me?
Yeah.
And as well, in the same sense, okay, if you get a hospitality and tourism coordinator for Unite, it is actually very hard for me to believe that I'm this person. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, okay, I'm in a sense in a more power position than any hospitality worker.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still being treated this way. What message is that sent to any waitress, chef, any migrant worker in there? If me, as a person who's supposed to be a voice for all those workers now,
mm-hmm.
I'm being denied to speak. And we try to, because it really shocked us, mm-hmm. and we weren't able to put like what, you know, like for me, it was very important that somebody gonna speak
mm-hmm.
on behalf of the hospitality workers. And I was like, okay, I get really upset, but I was like, okay, maybe it's actually right thing to do to let somebody speak. And I don't know if I should name the person.
It's fine. We don't need to name the person, but we know what happened. You can explain. She decided that it wasn't the right thing.
Oh no, she was shocked. We were all shocked. And first of all, she didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And as well, like from the union position, if we fight for equality for everybody and we fight with the discrimination, what other choice? If the union will agree on that, we basically like we should all resign, you know, like
well, it's very casual to dismiss somebody because of their accent when we live in a country where there are multiple accents. And, you know, even within Irish accents, there's multiple accents, but we are not a single Irish ethno-national state. Well,
let's not infer that, but let's absolutely say that in 2020, if you can't listen to people with different accents, you haven't been outside your front door. Okay.
Yeah.
If you just haven't been, and I'm going to use my own slur. If you just want the D4 set accent or whatever it is, off you go. That's not the real world anymore.
Yeah.
And you know, Ireland has been enriched by migration, and we need migrant workers. We need people to come in, and we need a broader people. And just for that, it really pissed me off. And that's why I brought it up. I was aware of the situation and it really did annoy me, because I know from my own personal experience that we've interviewed people here and then other people have come on to us and said, would you like to talk about this? And I said, why wouldn't you just talk to the person we did?
Well, it used to be, there used to be a time in particularly in Ireland, if you had a Dublin accent, you weren't allowed on RTE. It was looked down on. You had to have this particular plummy Dublin 4 accent, which doesn't apply anymore, but they need to broaden their scope more. Yeah, there are a lot of different accents in Ireland, and we've just done nearly over half an hour and we understand you perfectly. There's no problem understanding you.
Can I ask you, where to next? Where's this going next?
Like with the RTE?
No, with the
with the Ivy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like I think like because I can just add to the RTE because we kind of like you see, we decide to send a letter to mm-hmm. them at first, and we didn't get a response. I think for 2 weeks or something around that. Then we publish that on the social media, on Twitter, on Facebook.
Hmm.
Still, nothing happened. Then I actually contact the Irish Times. So Irish Times publish it on the front page.
Hmm.
And after that, I received the apology letter.
Hmm.
And they offered me a slot But then when it comes to a time of the slot and what show it should be, it went all quiet again. So.
And it has stayed at that.
I think they were, it stayed like that for now. And I think they actually were maybe hoping that they stressed me enough, and they did actually. And I struggled to speak publicly after what they,
after the incident, yeah.
After the incident, it wasn't, you know, we have to still remember because, okay, I'm coming as a Unite person now, but I'm just a waitress. And that's what I was doing for the last 19 years, you know, like as well. I'm from Poland. I'm under extreme pressure. And I hope that actually my whole point of being there on the position I am in now is to encourage workers. Then actually Irish people care. They care. There are people who wants to support the hospitality workers, who wants to fight for them. But without members joining the union, we don't have a proper strength. We don't know the issue. As much as my experience, you know, like obviously I know people working. I worked for 11 years in here. But my voice won't be listened if I stand on my own. You know, like even if it sends a message itself, if the union get a huge number of members. But it is very hard work. And even if I think about that podcast, or I think about a TV, because I was in prime time before, or newspapers, most of the workers are young and they migrants, or they don't read newspapers. I have very little hope that, you know, they will listen to a drive time. It's really like face-to-face contact, going to business, and I'm pretty sure, like, at the moment they already alert, and I'm sure that the union get bad mouth, and it is very difficult, and if, because I'm thinking about a lot of things in the same time, and we're running out of time, perhaps, but, yeah, and coming back, where the Ivy is going, like, you know, like, if it's like, you know, obviously the court case, it's coming up. We hope then that's going to draw a lot of attention of a need of a strong regulation in that matter, because obviously workers are being robbed. The customers are being robbed because the money doesn't go where the customer intend that money to go.
Well, the customer is expected to pay for a meal, not pay for wages.
Exactly. And they believe then that money goes on the top of the wages as extra.
Yeah.
But as well, like, you know, it's really three issues, because there is another issue of unfair competition. How any decent business can compete with the Ivy, who is in the middle of the city center. So no matter how many protests we're going to throw there, it's a tourist trap. Somebody going to pass by, it's beautiful restaurant. Let's come in. They're going to be still full. Even like I know that a lot of Irish people start to avoid the place, or they're quite aware of the policy. So they remove the service charge and they tip in cash instead, which the workers can still keep. But you know, like we're not gonna be able to fix that. So all we need, it's really something which will protect the workers and the customers and other businesses which are honest.
It's a great point, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's, and you know that the race to the bottom, Tony, will be set by those who have the worst standards, not by those who have the best standards.
I mean, when you think about it, if you're an ethical employer, as we always say, and you want to pay a living wage, and you recognize unions and you do all that, you're at a disadvantage by an unscrupulous employer who is paying a minimum wage and telling them, we make it all up to you on what we take off you off the tips you earn. It's just infuriating.
I actually spoke to one of the businesses each all the tips are going to the workers. And then I was like, oh, maybe they will like, because I think then actually some of the honest employers should step forward and say like, okay, I don't like that. And the people are scared, you know, like it was like, oh no, I don't think I want to stuck my head out there.
Yeah.
You know, that is really because, you know, like it's all the restaurant association, the hotel federation, it's basically right now they're fighting restlessly to keep the service charge out of the scope of the protection.
Yes.
So they refer the service charge as a contract between the business and the customer. And then the service charge should be used whatever they want, because the service charge doesn't belong to staff in their understanding.
There's a dishonesty about it. There is a dishonesty about it. But I think you've done a huge amount of work. I mean, you've been a lone voice out there for quite a while, and now you have union support and backup. We can only hope that you win this court case and keep going.
Yeah, like I hope I win the court case, but most importantly, I hope then it's gonna put some impact and highlight the issue once again, then the regulation is needed. And I hope then people will understand that I'm exactly the same, the people I want to join, then I'm exactly the same as them. There is absolutely no difference. And, you know, like, funny enough, you know, I was wiping tables all my life, and suddenly I start to be in the middle of something because I opened my mouth. And everybody's quiet, nobody's complaining, you know, people are afraid, and suddenly, you know, like, oh, you're in the media, you're in the podcast now. And, you know, like, I'm nothing else but just the waitress who got enough. So if I can make such an impact in this country, because I think then, you know, like, regardless, I wish to do more, but, you know, like, to coming from wiping tables to be in the TV, to be in the radio, to be in the newspaper, you know, what will happen if the people will just join, speak up, stay together? You know, that is the most important thing, because if you get one person, you can fire them easily.
Yeah.
If you get unionized, whole place, they can't get rid of everybody. That's the thing, that is our strength, you know, like, the people, they can't ignore all of us.
Well, that brings us back to, and very neatly at the end, brings us back to solidarity. And that is what it's about, is solidarity. It's about all standing together. Thank you so much for coming in and doing this podcast with us. Delighted to have you in. We hope everything goes well for you. Tony.
Julia Marciniak, that was really good. And I hope listeners get the message, whether you're in hospitality, whether you're in anything. It's about workers uniting. It's truly, union membership is at a historic low.
Yeah.
It needs to bounce back. Myself and Martin were at a big thing in Liberty Hall, and the demographic was certainly not of a younger generation. We need younger members. They need to come to the fore, and the unions need to get more active and radicalized. We know that.
Yeah.
This is the only way we can push back. And then again, we also need people to help us out here, keep these podcasts going.
That's true.
No, honestly, folks, we rely on you guys. We rely on you all. So it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Thank you so much for your time. Take care.
Thank you very much.